They have a Rambam Zmanim. So tonight is Vav Adar, only natural that we discuss topics which are in Yonah Delaymer, related to Purim, Yemei HaPurim, HaMemash Mishim Uboim. Next week, we will also have a Shir, and that will be one night before Tanis Esther, before Purim, the night of Tanis Esther before Purim. But today we will be discussing a topic which is relevant to Purim, but not only to Purim, but to all year round. Matonis Levyonim, how do we define an Evin? Who are the people that have the right to receive funds from tzedakah, whether it's Matonis Levyonim or all year round? So that is the topic we will be discussing today. But before we embark on our journey and we start learning, let's dedicate tonight's shir Le'ilui Nishmosoi, our dear friend Reb Shimon Pine, who was a steady participant in the shir since it began, has yortzeit tonight for his late father. So we learn Le'ilui Nishmas Reb Eliezer ben Reb Yitzchok Yehuda. Tonight is the yortzeit, and father of our dear friend Seth Grossman. I don't see him right here. And tonight is his yortzeit. So Seth Grossman drives me to this shir many times. He lives in Beit Shemesh. He's a friend of Rabbi Isaacson, who drives me on a steady basis. When Rabbi Isaacson is away, then Seth fills it. Two wonderful people. So tonight, yesterday night was the yortzeit. Today was the yortzeit of Reb David ben Reb Menachem Monish. So Reb Shimon, your father should be a meitzeis yosef for the entire family. You should only know nachas simcha kol hayomim, and the same to the Grossman family. Their father should be a meitzeis yosef, and we'll always share besoidos toivos. So besides the mitzvah of mikro megillah, which is the basic form of persume nisa, to remember the miraculous events of in the days of Mordechai ve'Esther, we also have three additional mitzvahs. Mishloach Monos, Matonis Levyonim, and Sudas Purim, Simchas Purim. Today we focus on Matonis Levyonim. And primarily, how do we define an Evyon or an Oni? Are they the same or different? So some of the Gedolim of our time wrote that Purim, it is a Hidor to look for an Evyon. And an Evyon and an Oni are not exactly the same. So in Parshas Kisetze we have a lav loy sashoik sachar oni ve'evyoin, and that is about halona sachar. It's a lav not to pay a worker before nightfall. You need to pay a worker on the day he did his job, and that is loy sashoik sachar oni ve'evyoin loy solin and loy sashoik. So the Gemara deals Baba Mitzia Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Beis. Why does the Torah say Oni and Evyon? Lahagdim Oni la Evyon. And the Gemara defines, what is the difference? So, using English, I would loosely translate the two definitions, the two words, a needy person and a desperate person. So desperation is beyond just a person in need. So an Oni is a person that doesn't have. An Evyon is one that doesn't have anything. So an Evyon is the one that already is a nitzach al habrias, and he no longer is embarrassed to stretch out his hand and ask for support. An Oni is a newcomer to the trade, and he's still embarrassed, and he feels very humiliated to stretch out his hand and ask for support. And that is why when it comes to paying wages, and you don't have enough to pay them all, then you need to give preference to the Oni. Because the Evyon is going to collect money anyway. But the Oni is embarrassed, so put the Oni before the Evyon. So what we learn in Bava Metzia Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Beis is every poor person, every needy person is an Oni. But Evyon is the one in terrible desperation. And because the mitzvah is Matones Le'Evyonim, some Gedolim wrote that we need to find an Evyon. So I heard a story about a very frum guy that made a major effort, and he found an Evian, and he didn't tell anybody because he wanted to keep him for next year. He said, I worked so hard to find an Evian, I'm not going to let him away easily, so I'm going to keep him for next year. So he told nobody about that Evian that he really found. So I don't think that's a big chumra. I don't think that's the right way to do. I would prefer he sees to it that even before Purim comes, he should no longer be an Evian and either be an Oni. So do we really need an Evian? And my argument against this chumra is Megillas Esther is not a halachic source. We don't paskin shilas out of Megillas Esther. We paskin shilas out of the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. So let's see what the Rambam says about Matones Levyoinim. So the Rambam in Perek Beis of Hilchas Megillah, and I'm reading the Rambam, it's a bit lengthy, but it's very important. V'chayev l'chalak l'aniyim b'yoyim apurim. Ein poches m'shnei aniyim noisim l'kol echot meton achas. Oy mois, oy menit avsho. Sh'neemar o Matones Levyoinim. Sh'tei Matones l'shnei aniyim. V'ein medagdikim b'mois purim. אלא כל הפוישי גד ליטול, נויסלם לוי, ואין משלם מויספורים לצדוקה אחרס. And then the Rambam goes on, that the mitzvah is לסמח לב עניים. Five times, in these halachos, the Rambam writes about giving money to עניים. He doesn't even once mention an Evyon. And the same in Shulchan Aruch, Siman Tov Resh Tzadik Dalet. So the heading, the caption, Siman Tov Resh Tzadik Dalet is, Mois Purim L'Aniyim, doesn't say Evyon. And the Shulchan Aruch writes you need to give Shtei Matonis L'Shnei Aniyim, doesn't say an Evyon. And both the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch have the greatest Noisei Kalim. So, in Hilchas Megillah we have the Magid Mishnah and the Lechem Mishnah. And we have the Taz and the Mogen Avraham. No one mentions you need an Evyon. So this Chumrah is totally unfounded and unsubstantiated because the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch speak about Matonis L'Aniyim, and they don't say Evyon. So the Aruch HaShulchan already dealt with this question in Siv Gimel, and the Aruch HaShulchan has an amazing diyuk. Can I have a Chumash Devarim? If anybody knows where the Chumashim are. And it's a very powerful diyuk, so yes. So the lesson in the Megillah is Matones le'Evyonim, and the Gemara in Bava Metzia Kuf Yud Aleph does differentiate between Oni and Evyon. But the context of the difference between Oni and Evyon is in Loi Sashoik Sechar Oni ve'Evyon. But in Parshas Re'ei, in the psukim that deal with the mitzvah of tzedakah, the Aruch HaShulchan has a very powerful diyuk. And once again, we will read a series of psukim. Ki yeh b'chu Evyon. Ma'achad achachu b'yachad shorechu b'yaratzu v'asher Hashem lakechu no yisimachu. לא יתאמץ לבבכם, ולא יתקפץ יתכם, מוכיחו, הו אביון. אביון נאמבר 2. נאמבר 3. כי פסוח תפתח יתכם, והב את אביתן את המחסור השיח שלוי. השם הלכו בן יד עברם לבבכם, בליעל לאמור, קובו שנס השב ושנס השמיטו, ורוא עיניכו, בוכיחו, הו אביון. נאמבר 3. נעשו אין תיתן לוי, ולא יירא לבבכם בתיתך לוי, כי בגלל הדבר הזה יברכו השם לוקחו בכל מעשיך ובכל משתכנותיך. כי לא יחדל אביון מקרב הארץ. נאמבר 4. אביון. על כן אנוכי מצווך לאמור, פסח תפתח יתכם לאחיך, לעניך ולאביונך בארצך. פסח באביון, וסיים לעניך ולאביונך בארצך. So mitzvah tzedakah is the same, whether it's oni or it's an Evyon, and the same would apply to Matonis Levyoinim. So, I don't think the Aruch HaShulchan's argument is a very powerful argument. Yes, tzedakah is mainly oni ben levyon, but maybe Matonis Levyoinim, after all in Megillas Esther, the Pasuk does not mention oni, only Evyon. So, I don't think the Aruch HaShulchan's argument is a very powerful one. I think my argument is far more convincing. The Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch don't even once mention Evyon. And the Rambam says you need to give Shtei Matonis L'Shnei Aniyim, and the same we find in Shulchan Aruch. And if the din is there is a kpeda to have an Evyon, we would expect the Magid Mishnah, the Lechem Mishnah, the Mogen Avraham, the Taz, the Great Achroinim to say something. And therefore, now I don't think you need to make a special effort to look for an Evyon. Just give for anyone that needs your help. beyond that. So there's a halacha in Hilchas Purim, which interesting, is not found in Masechet Megillah. And why is it so interesting? Because Hanukkah and Purim have so much in common. These are two Yomim Tovim that are Derabbanan. Both are Zeichel and Eis. Both come to remember amazing, miraculous events that happened La'achar Matan Torah. They're not Mena Torah. So they have so much in common. But Hanukkah only has 2.5 blot in the Gemara and Perek Beis the Shabbos. And Purim has an entire Masechta. But there's one fundamental halacha, Hilchas Purim, Matonis Levyoinim, that is not a Masechet Megillah, but rather in Bava Metzia, Dafayin Ches, and that's interesting. So in Yerushalmi, it is found in Masechet Megillah, but not in Bavli. And that is the din that we learn in Bava Metzia and Ches. Ein medaktikin bedavar. Magvis Purim lePurim. Money you collect for Purim, you must give out on Purim. And you can't give it out any other time. And you can't designate that money to any other tzedakah. It must be given to Aniyam on Purim. So the lesson of the Yerushalmi is, Kol ha-poshet yad noisnim loy. And the Rambam combines the lesson of Bavli and the Yerushalmi. Ein medaktikim bedobar, ela kol mi she-poshet yad noisnim loy. So when we give out tzedakah all year round, we have the right to examine people that ask for tzedakah and check them out, to do a background check. Are they really eligible? Do they deserve to get from public funds? But Purim, we don't check anyone out. And the Ramban, and the Ritva, and the Rosh, Toises HaRosh Bov Metziayin Ches, all explain. And why is that? Because Kedei Shiyu Hakol Samechem. And what I learned from these Rishonim and from that Sugya is the essence of both Matonas Levyoinim and Mashloach Monas are the same. Everyone should be happy. This is a day of joy, and it is our imperative and responsibility to see that everyone is part of this Yom Tov, that everyone rejoices, and everyone, at least this day, has a table full of goods and Chai V'Nish Levesumei. So the essence of Mishloach Monos and Matonas Levyoinim is the same, Shiva Hakol Smechem. So why do we send one Mishloach Monos to a friend and we need to give two Matonas to two Aniyim? Some would say there are always more Aniyim than friends. So if you send to one friend, you got to send to two Aniyim. But I think it's not only because there are more Aniyim than friends, but it comes to stress and emphasize that Matonas Levyoinim is more important than Mishloach Monos. And that is the beautiful Rambam. When the Rambam in his very special and beautiful Lashon, in that same Perek that I quoted before, Perek Bey is Halacha Yud Zayin in Hilchas Megillah, the Rambam writes, and I quote, Mutav lo odem laharbeis b'matonis avyoinim, melaharbeis b'su'udosoi u'bishloyach monis l're'eyu. She'ein sham simcho gedoylo u'mefoyoro, ela l'sameach levanim v'yesoimim v'almonis v'gerim. Sham esameach lev u'imlolim doima l'shchino, shenema l'hachis ruach shveilim, u'lahachis lev nidekoim. So the greatest mitzvah we have in this day, and it comes before Matonas Levyoinim, and before your private Suda, is Matonas Levyoinim. And that is why Chazal say, give for two Aniyim, but Mishloach Monos, it's enough if you send just to one of your friends. But Matonas Levyoinim and Mishloach Monos have the same goal and the same objective. Shiyu Hakol Samechem. And that is why we don't check people out. Because you need to give to a person that's muhzak b'cheskes avyoin. You need to give to people that present themselves as avyoinim. But if it's so transpired that the person you gave is not an avyoin, you still were mekayim the mitzvah. Because that is where Chazal defined the mitzvah. And if those are the halachas, then you are mekayim the mitzvah. Dimyon rochoik. I'll give an example, which is a far example, but essentially, I think it's the same. In Gittin Dav Samech Aleph, we learn, Mefarnesen Aniyei Akum Im Aniyei Yisroel. And that is Mishum Darkei Sholem. So if we have a public kupa to support the needy and the desperate, and there are non-Jews in the town, we support them as well. So what is the halacha? Person gives ma'isa money, and he gave his ma'isa money to the kupish al tzedakah. 10% of that money went to support non-Jewish families. So do we need to notify all the people, if you gave ma'isa to our kupa, you need to add another 10% to your ma'isa, because you can't give ma'isa to non-Jews. No, they don't need to add anything. Because if these are Hilchos Tzedakah, then this is Hilchos Tzedakah. And if you gave your ma'isa to the Kupish al Tzedakah, that is Tzedakah. And within the context of Hilchos Tzedakah, yes, we support the needy and the desperate that are not our brethren as well. So that would be the same Yesoid as Matonas Levyonim. So if Chazal say Ein Medaktekin Bedavar, then that is the halacha. So if you gave a person, at the end of the day, he might not be an Evyan, you still were Mekayim the Mitzvah because he presented himself as an Evyan, and according to Chazal, he deserves your support, and if you need to give him, then that is the Mitzvah of Matonas Levyonim. Because essentially, at the end of the day, it is not the classic Mitzvah of Tzedakah, it is Shiyu Hakol Samechem, the entire community. So you need to care especially for those that you need to be Mesameach, for the aniyim, for the needy, for the desperate. But it is essentially about Simchas Purim. So let's go back to the question, how do we find an oni? So Purim, we don't check people out. But all year, yes, we have a right. We should check people out. Are they really eligible? Do they need our support? So the earliest source how to define an oni is in Peah, Perek Ches, Mishnah Ches. So Masechet Peah deals with Matnas Aniyim. And Matnas Aniyim are primarily Leket Shekcha Peah, the produce of your field, once in 3 years, Maser Oni. That those are essentially Matnas Aniyim. So the Mishnah says, Mishyesh lo Mosayim Zuz can no longer get Matnas Aniyim. If he doesn't have Mosayim Zuz, then he is entitled to collect Leket Shekcha Peah Maser Oni. However, the Mishnah says, if he has Chamishim Zuz, but he's dealing, and he's a wheeler and dealer, he is a salesman, and he's doing business, then those 50 Zuz are worth more than another person that just has Mosayim Zuz, either cash or in the bank, but his money is not making money. And the Rash on the spot explains, so what is the significance of Mosayim Zuz? How did Chazal come up with that number? And the Rash argues, Mosayim Zuz in their day and age was the cost of living for a year's time. If you had Mosayim Zuz, that will get you through the year. And the Rash contemplates, is that for a couple or for an individual? Maybe it is Mosayim Zuz for each member of the family. So you and your wife and three kids, that would be 1,000 Zuz, not Mosayim Zuz. But the essence and of that number is a year's expense. So if you have enough money to get you through the year, you could no longer collect. But if you don't have enough money to get you through the year, then you're an oni and you could collect money. Or Zerua, Hilchas Tzedakah 7 Yudalad, we find a machlokes between two Rishonim. Rabbeinu Klonimos turned to Rabbeinu Ephraim with a question. Because this Mishnah and this sum of Mosayim Zuz we find only in Masechet Peah regarding Matnas Aniyim, would the same rule apply to Hilchos Tzedakah as well? Matnas Aniyim is the produce of the field, and that includes Leket, Shikha, Peah, Peret, Orelot. Once in 3 years, 10% of your produce, that is Maaser Oni, goes to Aniyim. But would the same apply to tzedakah? If a person has Mosayim Zuz, he cannot, not entitled to get tzedakah from our public fund. If he has less than Mosayim Zuz, we would give him. So Rabbeinu Kleinemus argued, maybe it applies only to Leket Shikha V'Peah, but not to tzedakah. And tzedakah, even if you have Mosayim Zuz, you're still entitled to ask people for support. Why would there be a difference? So Rabbeinu Kleinemus argues, two reasons. Maybe there's a difference between Matnas Aniyim and Tzedakah. Matnas Aniyim is a fixed amount, a fixed quantity. There will be no more if it's gobbled up by the few. It is what it is. People left. Leket, shikha, peya. Maseroni, 10%. That is what is available. And we need to divide that between the aniyim. So if you're not entitled to take, and you do take, that is at the direct expense of others. That means other people who are entitled might not have, because you took what you did not have a right to take. Number one. Number two, matnas aniyim is mamoin aniyim. So actually that is theft. If you're not allowed to take, then you're stealing, because that moment belongs to aniyim. But when you ate tzedakah, tzedakah belongs to the people that give the tzedakah. It is not yet mamoin aniyim. So for two reasons, Rabbeinu Kolem has argued, maybe these guidelines, Mosayim Zuz, Chamishim Zuz, that are active, are only relevant to matnas aniyim. But tzedakah, if you are relatively in need, you have the right to ask for a tzedakah. Rabbeinu Ephraim's response was, no. If we define an oni, that definition is valid, is relevant by all the dinam of tzedakah. Whether it's tzedakah out of a kupishal tzedakah, whether it's matnas aniyim, it's the same. The Torah and the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Reish Nun Gimel in Hilchas Tzedakah bring the din of Mosayim Zuz. So obviously, their opinion is the response of Rabbeinu Ephraim to the question of Rabbeinu Kronomos brought in Or Zeruah. So in Halacha, Mosayim Zuz, that is the threshold. And it's the same regarding matnas aniyim, leket, shikra, vepeya, or tzedakah. However, the Torah writes that some argue that that number is no longer relevant today. It was relevant in their day and age, but no longer. And this tool is an interesting example of Gedolei Yisrael being aware of changing norms and changing times. And sometimes we need to adapt halachas, which would no longer seem relevant. And what I mean to argue today, maybe the adaptation that the Torah brings 800 years ago needs to be once again changed, because maybe the world has once again changed and evolved, and that formula might no longer be relevant today. So the Torah writes, in days of yore, our society was an agricultural society, and the main income of aniyim was matnas aniyim from the fields, because the cities were full of agricultural fields, and the aniyim knew exactly when is the ona, when is the period in which the grain is ripe for harvest, and when they pluck the apples and the oranges and the fruits and the grapes, and they prepared. And every few weeks, you know, the aniyim got together at the fields when the fruit was harvested and the grain was cut, and that is what they lived off. But that is no longer relevant today. The Torah writes 850 years ago, we are no longer an agricultural society, and the income of aniyim is no longer annual. So in those days, it was some kind of an annual income. Once a year, they knew when to come to get this and when to come to get that, and they accumulated, and everybody came with big bags with his family members, and what they collected sustained them for a while. And the same is Maser Oni. But today, when it's more about money, it's not annual, then Mosayim Zuz would no longer be relevant. The Torah also writes another argument. Once, people's expenses were minimal. They didn't have a very high standard of living, and therefore, Mosayim Zuz would get you through the year, but maybe that is no longer relevant. That's what the Torah writes. So the Torah suggests, if you don't have a keren to enable you to live off the profits, then you're an oni and you have the right to collect tzedakah. How many people today have capital and they can live off the profits? That would be a very rich person. How many people today have $5 million in the bank, and just from the interest, they could live? And the Torah doesn't write how long would he live off the keren of the capital all his life? So if you don't have enough money accumulated to live off the profits, you're an ani. I think most of us would be eligible to collect tzedakah. So it's either you have tons of money in the bank, but banks today don't pay interest, or you have real estate. And from the rent, you could live. Ain't that many people that have, you know, real estate, and they could just sit back and live off collecting the rent. But that is the formula that the Torah suggests, that if you have the keren and you can live off the ravachim, then you could no longer collect tzedakah. But if you don't have a keren and you can't live off the profits you're making, then you could collect tzedakah. But the Torah writes, Hakolafi Hamokoim Vahashor. And I think that is the punchline. Hakol Lafi Hamokoim Vahashor. So this Chiddush of the Torah is brought in Shulchan Aruch, Reish Nun Gimel Siv Beis. And the lesson of the Shulchan Aruch is, Yesh Mi She'aymer, that today the definition of an Oni would be a different one. And even if you have Messiah, but if you don't have a Keren and you can't live over the Ravochim, then you are eligible to collect Tzedakah. V'divrei tam hem. Advorim divrei tam hem. And that's an uncommon compliment for the Shulchan Aruch to give. Does that mean the Shulchan Aruch paskins that? I don't know. V'advorim hem divrei tam. That's the lesson Shulchan Aruch uses. I don't know what to make of this lesson. Advorim hem divrei tam. I think the Shulchan Aruch means to say, makes sense. What makes more sense is that Musayim Zuz is no longer relevant. But would that be a psak halacha? I don't think so. Dvorim em divrei tam. Shulchan Aruch means to say the argument that we need a new formula. We need a new definition. That is a very powerful argument. It is no longer a Masayim Zuz. For different reasons. Masayim Zuz is based on the annual expenses. So why would an ani be tolui in a year? Why would there be a difference between 6 months or a year or 2 years? That made sense in an agricultural society where the primary income of the aniyim was the produce of the field, and that is annual, that is once a year. But why would the definition of an ani be, do you have enough for a year? So the Torah suggests another formula. But that formula is ill-defined. So Reb Chaim Kanievsky, Moron Reb Chaim Kanievsky in a Sefer Derech Amunah, Masechet Peah, says that the Torah's formula is also, if you have Keren which will keep you going for 1 year, then you're an Oni. But it doesn't seem reasonable to me, because the reason the Torah rejects the original formula from the Mishnah is because in the modern society, and I'm referring to the modern society of 850 years ago, it no longer depends on the year. So why would the new formula that the Torah suggests be depend on the year? That doesn't make sense. That is exactly why he rejects the original formula. So my understanding would be, if you have a steady income that's more or less respectable, then you're no longer an oni. And that income could be either from investments, which bring you profits, or from wages. If you have a job, and it's a steady job, then you're not an oni. You have no savings. But you have a decent job, and you get decent wages, then you're no longer an oni. So when the Torah writes, if you have a keren, and you can live off the ravochim, that means a person that is disabled or he doesn't have a job. So the fundamental idea is, you know, in this land we have a concept which is unknown in Chutz Laaretz, Gomer et HaChodesh. The Gomer et HaChodesh, you finish the month. We all ultimately finish the month as long as we're alive. But what the Torah means to say, if you have a steady reasonable income, then you're not an oni. Either you're getting paid wages on a steady basis and you have a steady job, or you have some investments and you could live on, you know, off those investments, then you no longer have the light to correct. So I don't have investments and I can't live off profits, but I'm not working. Are you an oni? Yes, but then we would expect you to look for a job. And in the modern world, well, for a certain period, we will give you the meaftala, but we will offer you a job and expect you to take that job, and that would be the same in the halacha. So when the Torah suggests that a person that doesn't have keren and he can't live off the ravachim is an oni, that means if for some reason he doesn't have a job and he has no steady income, then he would be defined as an oni. But if you have wages, it's all the same. And that would no longer be defined as an oni. So how do we define today an oni? And I think it is totally relative, and it depends on the standard of living and the norms of each given generation. We are an age of abundance, of amazing abundance. And the average family today throws out more food than that same family would consume in a week 100 years ago. Because this is the age of plenty, and even the aniyim today are far better off than the medium income families of 100 years ago. So my mother, Shetichia Bias Agoyal, many times tells us the story. Her father was a salesman, and he was considered not rich, but my father came from a very poor family, a Chassidish family, and my mother's family was somewhat more affluent. There were Obel in the family, and my mother's father was a salesman. I never got to know him because he was killed, murdered in Auschwitz, and he went up in the crematoriums. But my mother tells a story. She remembers once he came home as a salesman. He traveled the world. And the world he traveled was Seilish, Ungvar, Munkacs, Beregszász, and some other little towns in Hungary, which today are Ukraine. But he traveled the world. And my mother remembers once he came home with a banana, and the entire family sat around the table looking at that banana, and he sliced the banana into pieces. As the norm was at the time, as a father, he took the lion's share. And remember, my mother remembers that. So he took a third of the banana for himself. That was very generous. And the other two-thirds were cut up into 6 pieces for his wife and the 5 children. And each got a slice of the banana. And my mother remembers savoring that slice of banana. And that was family, middle-income family, well-to-do, not rich. So today, would we define an oni, he has more than he would have had 100 years ago? That's not relevant. So the concept of an oni depends on the day and age and the standard of living in any given society. If he is considered a person that is in need, and he can't provide for his family in a respectful fashion, then he would be defined as an oni. So the Mishnah Clear says, Ein mechai v'noi salim kor beisoi v'klei tashmisha. Person has a house. Would we expect sell your house? You have an expensive car. So why do you collect money if you have a car? Some people collect money in shuls in the morning. And there's a person in our shul that comes with a new Toyota every day in the morning, and he parks the car outside and he collects the money in the shuls. I'm just sharing with you a personal sentiment. So, first few days he collected, I didn't give him. And then I deeply regretted it. How does a person feel collecting money in shul and the Rav doesn't give him? That would be an awful feeling. Why would I hurt a person? And if I don't give him, who would? So I really did tshuva, and since then, every day I give him with a smile. And when I'm away in Chutz Lortz for a week, I come back, I give him 20 shekel, and it makes him so happy. So, Does he deserve it or not? Would we say, sell your car? Why would I care whether he deserves it or not? What am I giving him, you know? Make a person happy. Well, you know, maybe behilchus tzedakah he doesn't, but make a person happy. If he collects money, then he's a poor person. Objectively, subjectively, make people happy. That's a great mitzvah. So anyway, so ein mechayv anoyselim kebeisoy veklei tashmishov. However, the Torah brings ein mechayv anoyselim keklei tashmishov, and if he has spoons and cutlery that are made of gold or silver, would we still give him tzedakah? You have a set that's worth thousands of dollars. Maybe sell that set before. And it's interesting. The Poskim differentiate between personal items to which people might have sentimental attachment and items that are not very personal. So clay ochel once were considered very personal. Ein mechayv anoyselim ke, even shel kesef shel zohav. But furniture, we would expect them to sell. So if a person has an expensive car, according to the tool, we would say sell your car and buy cheaper car. If you drive around in a very expensive car, then don't collect tzedakah. You can't have a Porsche in your driveway and collect tzedakah. It doesn't go that way. So what would we expect a person to sell? This is very relative. It's very relative. It's very hard to define. And it depends upon the standard of living and the norms of any given society. So, ein mechayv anoyselim kor, what are the things that would he expect a person to sell and not? You know, hotza'a lepoel is a body that everybody hates and everybody dreads. But hotza'a lepoel today is far more compassionate than choshen mishpat. If you owe money and you need to pay, in choshen mishpat, we leave you with a minimum of your possessions in the house, and we will take most of what you have and sell. But that is when you owe money. By tzedakah, we are more lenient. And by tzedakah, we would not require you to sell chairs, tables, but if you have very expensive items, we would expect you to sell, unless those items have personal sentimental value. We would not expect you to sell your wife's jewelry. And if you don't have money, we will support you. Then you have the right to collect tzedakah. So these are very interesting halachas, and the challenge is, how do we interpret them in today's world? Yes?
Sometimes you have people who have a salary, but they don't manage with the salary. And then you have those organizations that will go and give some basic lessons of how to manage. And very often it works very well, but some people are not interested in following those lessons and all. Would they still be deserving tzedakah? Or would they say, well, we give you,
I'm very cautious, especially barabim, in giving piskei halacha which might negatively impact and affect people. I think we definitely, I know some of those organizations and I give my support to many of them because I think it's a great service to the community, and sometimes people need to be trained and educated how to manage their lives and manage their budgets. But, you know, the underlying principle is we need to be compassionate and feel with those people who are in desperation. And some people have objective difficulty. Sometimes, you know, it might destroy your shalom bias. And so, generally, I think we are a society of compassion and of tzedakah and of chesed and gemilas chasadim is one of the three pillars of our existence and our faith. One of them is gemilas chasadim. So, coming back to the fundamental questions, how do we define an oni? So, as I explained, if you have steady wages and you have steady income, and more or less it's respectable, and it's not a lot, you're not defined as an oni. If you don't have any steady income, which would either be wages or investments that bring you a steady income, then you are eligible to get tzedakah, and we would not expect you to sell your house or your personal possessions unless you have something which is out of the norm, and especially expensive. And I think a car is a good example. If you have an expensive car, we would expect you to sell that car. But once again, it's always easier to criticize from the outside than actually knowing the situation, because you might have an expensive car, but the second-hand value sometimes is not that much. So, and not always is it economically wise to sell the car and buy another one. Sometimes the difference wouldn't be that great. So, you know, people that are tzorei ayin would always say why he has an expensive car. Not always is it really relevant. So these are more or less the way we would define aniyim bisman hazeh. So mosayim zuz is no longer the arsik, and the tool writes lafi hamokim v'hasho. But I think the fundamental idea of the tool, if he has a keren and he could live off the ravocha, means does he have steady income? If he has wages or investments that keep him going, then he is not eligible for tzedakah. So how about a person that has savings? He has some money in the bank. Would we say, first eat up your savings before you stretch out your hand to take tzedakah? So I have a personal psak in this Indian, and I say, today, putting money aside is like klei tashmishoi. Because that is the modern world. Every simcha costs substantial money. Sometimes even your health would cost substantial money. It's different than the world of yore. Because, you know, in Shulchan Aruch, many poskim deal, when you have a chuppah Friday afternoon, and the women go to the chuppah, and by the time they'll get home, it'll be after the shkia, what do they do with hadlokas haneiros? This is a huge discussion and a controversy in the poskim. They give various different dates. So it was once commonplace to make a chuppah Friday afternoon. Why would people make a chuppah Friday afternoon? For a very simple reason. The Sudas El Shabbos was the Sudas Nisuyim. So in the middle of the week, you couldn't afford to make a Suda. Shabbos was anyway a nice meal. So the Chasana meal was your Shabbos Dika meal. You invited some neighbors, you invited some of your family. And when the people came to the Suda, one guy brought a kugel and the other brought a bottle of beer. And everybody chipped in, and that was a Chasana. But that is no longer the norm. So it is only normal that people put aside some money for a rainy day or for a very sunny day. Whether it's a rainy day or a sunny day, it is essential. It is a basic necessity in the modern world to have some money set aside. So a person that has $3 million invested in the bourse or in the bank is not entitled to take money even if he's not making a living. We would expect him... You have a lot of money set aside, and you need that, use that money before turning to asking help from people. But if he has a modest amount of money, which would help him for a bar mitzvah or a chasana or helping his kids a bit, k'minag o'olam, then he still would be eligible to collect tzedakah. I can't say exactly how much money, but a reasonable amount, l'fi darkei shel olam. So if you have a lot of money put aside, we would expect you use that money before turning to tzedakah and asking others for help. But if he has a modest sum, which is set aside, which is essential in this modern world for anything, any special expense that you need. So, my bar mitzvah, and I'm not complaining, chas v'sholem, my bar mitzvah was the supper in the yeshiva. So, was my bar mitzvah. Just for a very simple reason. Our family came to Eretz Yisrael 3 days before my bar mitzvah. My ofruf was in America, and the bar mitzvah was Wednesday night in Eretz Yisrael. We didn't have many friends in Eretz Yisrael yet. So, you know, Aruchat Erev and the yeshiva was my bar mitzvah. The Klois HaMagadavi came. It was a big simcha. And the biggest gift I got to my bar mitzvah, and I still cherish it very much, is a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. That was the biggest maton I got to my bar mitzvah. And the new Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is 2 or 3 volumes, but the one I got was one little volume. So simchas once were far simpler than they are today. But today every simcha costs a substantial amount of money, especially when it comes to a chasana. So even if you have a modest amount of money set away, put away in the bank, if you don't have steady income, you are entitled to get tzedakah. Kach nani yizdak. So when it comes to a matonah sev yoinim, so when it comes to Purim, you give anybody that seems to be an avian. Anybody stretches out his hand, we never turn people away and pull him. And this Loshon Kol HaPushet Yad Noisim is very well known amongst Hasidim and the Rishonim. And we say, when we turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with our tefillahs and Purim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns no one away. Kol HaPushet Yad Noisim Loi. Mida Keneged Mida. If we give for anybody their requests our help, and we don't check them out, V'yein Medaktikin, HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds in the same way to us. And when we turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we plead with him to help us, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds in the same way. So I quoted this halacha a few times in today's shiur. Ein medaktika medova, kol hapushit yad noisim loy. And the Ramban and the Rishonim say, kedei shiyu hakol semechem. Everyone should be happy. This is a day in which we rejoice. And when we rejoice, you need to see to it that everybody could be part of that simcha. And the Rambam, I quoted, you should be more mahadar by matonis levim, levyonim, than mishloach monas or sudis bulim. Ein loch simcha gedoyla umefo'ora, than supporting those and making them happy, the needy and the desperate, the yosem and the almona. And that is acting like a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Lahachyos ruach shefeilim. And that is what a Kodesh Baruch Hu does, and that is what he expects us to do. Kedeshu hakol semechem. And it's very well known, the two different explanations. Mishloach monos. So the Rambam, through his edition, make it very clear. Mishloach monos is associated with Sudas Purim. And I think the same refers to Matonas Levyoinim. But the monos halevi, Maharash al-Kebetz, who was one of the greatest Makabolim of his generation, but he is best known for Lechudoidi. Lechudoidi is his shiur. It's his song, his poem. So the Marash Alkebetz in his Perash HaMegillas Esther writes that Mishloach Monos is Laharbois Achva V'Reyus, to enhance friendship and brotherhood and Ava and Achva and Reyus. Why is there a special Inyan and Purim? So Marash Alkebetz in Monas Alevi writes, Keneged Divrei Haman. Haman said, Yesh lo am echod mafuzer mafayrod. So we want to bring them all together. But that is definitely drash. When Haman complained, Yesh lo am echod mafuzer mafayrod, he wasn't concerned about the lack of achdus amongst the Jews. That wasn't his problem. When Haman tells Achashverosh, Yesh noi am echod mefuzer mefoyred b'kol medinas malchusecho, that was the classical anti-Semitic approach. The Jews are everywhere, like an octopus who has his, you know, his tentacles everywhere, in finance and the media. They control the world, just like the anti-Semites said in every world, in every generation. That is what Haman said. Yesh noi am echod mefuzer mefoyred b'chol medinas malchusecho. They control all those medinas. They control everything. They control the banks and the newspapers and the media. And so this is definitely drash. So the Monas Alevi says, Keneged yesh noi am echod mefuzer mefoyred. It is our goal to enhance achdus. But I think it's more profound. It's more profound than that. The first time in history that anybody had the chutzpah and the cruelty to try to annihilate the Jewish people for no obvious reason. No obvious reason. We didn't threaten Haman or Achashverosh. We weren't at war. There was no political friction between the Jews. The Jews didn't have power. Unlike Bizman Churban Habayis, there was political tension between the Jewish leadership and the Romans. Haman was out to destroy, to annihilate an entire people. Lahashmut, la'areg, ula'abed, eskoli Yehuda, menar ve'ad zokon. Even Paroi didn't dare to devise such a plan. Paroi gozer ala zechorim, lo ananikeves, kol bein hayeloid. So what Chachamim come to teach us? In a time of threat, when our people is in danger, the biggest gula is achdus, achva, v'reivs. That is the remedy. That is the greatest gula. Chazal say in Medrash, "Bezman shi yisrael ba'aguda achas, ein kol uma v'lashoin, yecholo lishloi de bohem." And the Medrash goes on to explain what does aguda achas mean. And Chazal being a marshal of aguda shel konim, even a little child could break a single reed. Reeds are thin, very easy to break. They're brittle. But when you have a bundle of reeds tied together, Shimshon, a giver, can't break them apart. And that is agudosoy al eretz yosodo. So Chazal say, "Bizman sheyesol ba'aguda achas ein kol uma v'loshin yecholo lishloi lehem." So unity is strength, and unity gives us chayin in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects us to be. That is the way we were by Mamed Har Sinai, by Yichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar, by Yichan Sham Yisrael B'loshin Yochid Ki Yishechod B'lev Echad. So I think Mishloach Monis Laharbis Achvo Vareyes is conveying a most important and fundamental message to Klal Yisrael. When our people is in danger, like they were Bisman Haman, it was the first time in history that somebody was out to annihilate and destroy the Jewish people just because they're Jews. And the second time probably was Hitler, Yimach Shemay, 80 years ago in Germany. So the greatest gula is Lahabois, Achva, Vareyus. Keeping together, sticking together. Ishes Re'eu Yazoyre V'la'ochel Yoyim HaChazak, Shiyu Hakol Smeichem. And that is the interpretation of the Monas Alevi about the mitzvah of Mishloach Monas Ishla Re'eu V'matonas Lev Yoyinim. It is not only tzedakah, and it is not only seeing to it that every family has food on the table, Purim, but it is also to enhance Achva V'Reus. So years ago, I gave a shiur about Mishloach Monas, and I dealt with the Tshuvas Ksav Sofer, the Ksav Sofer from Clarence. You know, he has a chakira, and he deals with the question, if a person sends Mishloach Monas and the recipient doesn't know who sent it, was he still Makayim the mitzvah of Mishloach Monas? So usually you send Mishloach Monas with a child, and sometimes the shliach forgets or confuses one with the other. Many years ago, I was a younger man living in Kiryat Sanz, and I sent Mishloach Monas. So my son, I only have one son, Baruch Hashem, I have daughters, but one son, some of you know him, Binyamin, and he was a little boy, and I sent with him two Mishloach Monas. So one was for Rosh Hashiva, and I sent him a Minchas Osher, I don't remember which one, but one of the early Minchas Oshers, it was many years ago, and a bottle of wine and a box of cookies, probably, I don't remember. And his neighbor was a young couple with two kids, so in his Mishloach Monas, there were two gragers, two rashanim. And by Mincha, I meet my friend Rosh Hashiva, and he asked me, I loved your Mishloach Monas. Those two gragers, one for me, one for my wife, he asks me. So I understood that there was somewhat a confusion. I just wondered what the other guy did with the Mincha Sosha. That I just wondered. So when you send Mishloach Monas and the recipient doesn't know who sent that Mishloach Monas, were you Makayim the Mitzvah? And the Ksav Sofer says, if the objective of the Mitzvah is Sudas Purim, then you were Makayim the Mitzvah. Why would it matter whether he knows who sent it or not? You know, he got it. But if the objective is Lahabois Achva Vareyes, and he doesn't know who sent it, then you achieve no goal. And I think to myself, maybe it's even a hiddur if he doesn't know who sent it, because every other person he meets on the street, he'll think, maybe that's the one that sent me that beautiful basket. So maybe it's even a hiddur. He shouldn't know who sent it, and I'll be far more receptive and appreciative. And I look around at people, and he says, so many wonderful people. I wonder which is the one that sent me that Mishloach Monas, and I love them all. Why wouldn't we assume that that's the way things will work out? Obviously, the Ksav Sofer knew human nature better than I do. And he assumed, if you don't know who sent it, then why appreciate them all? So, Mishloach Monas, is also about enhancing Achdus, and I think the message this comes to convey. In the days of Haman and Ahasuerus, our people was in terrible danger. And there was to a miraculous salvation. But this gula in times of danger is Bizman Chiasol Bagudachas, and that is why Purim is a time in which we need to enhance Achdus and Achva v'Sholim. Talmid HaChachamim Ma'am Sholim B'Yoylam. That is the goal of Talmid HaChachamim. So Yirotzen, Shiach Alkenu Al-Moim, we should be amongst those Talmid HaChachamim that bring Avas Yisor and Avas Leim and Achva to the world, and we should be Zorcha B'Kura B'Yameinu V'Nahafachu Asher Yishlutu HaYehudim Heimo B'Saneim. We should only hear B'Sodes Tovish. Borachamon Hu Yaslanu Nisim Revoz Keshem Shol Sisol Abuseinu B'Yom HaMahim Ezman Hazeh. And we should be zoche to a geulas olam b'mehero v'yomeinu. Next week, Sunday, we have a shiur, like every week.
Which one is the same test, the obligation of the person who hates it? If you have a care
last week I also was in a bad feeling. There was no, I do not know that I do not. I forgot. Okay. Shiramalo is